Welcome to Hadar's newest podcast, On Sacred Ground, where we talk directly with Israelis who are wrestling with some of the most pressing spiritual and moral questions of the day. I'm Rabbi Avi Killip, here with Rabbi Avital Hochstein and Rabbi Elazar Simon. We started having these conversations a few weeks ago, right after October 7th, on another one of Hadar's podcasts called Tashma. Those episodes have all been published to this show's feed. So if you're listening for the first time, you can go back and listen to the ground that we've already covered. This is actually our 8th episode of these conversations. And that reflects how much time has passed and the moment that we are in right now, where we are well into many weeks of this war. And we just marked yesterday the 100th day of captivity for so many of our captives who were taken on October 7th. So Avital and Elazar, I'm grateful for these continued conversations and glad to be in this new platform on Sacred Ground to continue to hear your thoughts and your Torah for this moment. Here in America, we're sitting with a lot. We're sitting with marking the 100th day since the captives have been away from us and away from their families and really without any information about them at all. We're sitting with how many weeks we are into this war, especially from my community that I'm situated in America, also knowing so many soldiers and so many soldiers having been lost, just 0 or 1 or 2 degrees of separation away from our communities, certainly your communities. And the third thing is that we are watching right now a trial at The Hague where Israel is being tried for genocide. And that's a lot. There's a lot of different components to this moment. I remember us thinking, oh, will this podcast still be relevant? How many episodes could we possibly need? And it feels actually like we need this spiritual grounding more right now than we ever have. I'm curious how each of those things is being experienced in Israel more broadly, and also for the two of you, the trial and the war and the hostages. What's on your mind and what are you experiencing?
We did a podcast around Thanksgiving, focusing on thanks. And I think part of what I'm feeling is that this podcast, it just gives a minute to think in a kind of whirlwind of things. So I'll answer you by just reflecting on the week. About a month and a half ago, I went to a store with my daughter who was about to go into the army, and we needed to get some things for her towards her being drafted. And suddenly I heard someone crying, not quietly, but kind of spurt of emotions, like strong emotions. And my memory of it is that people stepped back. And I went towards the woman. I said, what happened? And she showed me that she had gotten a picture of her son from Gaza. She hadn't seen him in many weeks. And it was, I guess, a mixture of relief and I guess many other emotions. And I gave her a big hug and we looked at each other and we realized that we knew each other. Our paths had crossed before. And last Tuesday, her son was killed. Mm. And I think I was so worried that I had said something overly comforting, that I had said something wrong at that meeting in the store. That was on Tuesday. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all anyone talked about was the trial at The Hague. It was the newspapers of the weekend. We listened to pieces on the radio. Coming from a family of Holocaust survivors, the thought of being accused of genocide is horrifying. One of the newspapers I read on Shabbat had a kind of rashumon. Do you know that word? When a story is told from many different angles, the same story, and you see how different people experience it differently. So there was a description of the hunger in Gaza. They interviewed an Israeli army spokesman who's in charge of connection with Gaza Palestinians. They were interviewed a few Palestinians on the ground. They interviewed a UN person. Okay, so a whole array of people giving some Israeli politicians, an array of people giving their perspective on the hunger, which is a piece of the story.
Yeah.
It was very much in the front of what we were thinking about. Yesterday, we marked 100 days. The main focus was the captives, the people who were kidnapped. They were, personally, I went to two events marking the day. Both had hundreds of people, one in the morning, one in the evening. They included prayer. They included some words of Torah. They included some song. They included families of hostages. They were 24-hour events around the hostages. That was all we could think about. Mm-hmm. When I walked into the room now to record, Elazar said, "You heard about Ra'anana? There was just a terror attack in Ra'anana and 20 people were wounded." It's just overwhelming. Yeah. So the news of last week just seems like 100 years ago, not 100 days ago. It's
that's an unreasonable week. It's too much. Again, I feel like we've had the reverberations of that week here in America. Also mourning people probably from that same attack who were buried on Tuesday. Also watching this trial. Also marking 100 days. I also went to an event yesterday that had 200 people. You know, on Zoom, we're hearing from actually two of the hostages who were released, you know, whose family members are, whose husband is still there. And that same kind of whiplash back and forth. But I think probably I'm hearing the echoes and experiencing the echoes of what you're experiencing. Elazar, what was this week for you?
First of all, I just want to say that the story you told is incredible and heartbreaking, but thank you for sharing that. I feel similar. Everyone around me was very much talking about The Hague. On Shabbat, I had some previous students of mine from Cambridge, and some of them like deal with international law, and we had a long, long conversation over the Shabbat table about different aspects of it. And then on Motzei Shabbat, I open my Facebook and I just see all everyone was sharing like the lists of the names. I don't know if you saw that. I saw it in Hebrew and in English, loads of it.
The hostages.
Yeah, 136 who are still in captivity.
Yeah, and I was just thinking to myself like, you were thinking all this time about this Hague thing because it's, I mean, it's important, obviously, and it's hard, but it just kind of brought me back from that like conversation that has intellectual aspects and stuff like that to this just like very hard reality. Just like 2 hours ago, I went to get some lunch from our Beit Midrash, and on the way, I saw a middle-aged man, and he was putting stickers on a bus stop. And the sticker said, "Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, aval ta'amod al dam shvuyecha." So, "Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa," as we know, a commandment in the Torah that if you see blood being spilt, you can't ignore it. You have to intervene. You can't just wait for something to happen. But that, I think the sentiment is that now with these captives, we, the Israeli government, are just waiting and doing nothing while they're in constant danger. So that's very much, I think, criticism to our government for not working harder or accepting deals or whatever. But for me, just seeing him put that sticker up and he saw me looking at him, our eyes like met. And I don't know who he is. I don't know if he's just, you know, some activist that cares about it, or maybe his son is there. And I also, it was hard for me that I knew that he was thinking, oh, what is this guy thinking? Is he one of the people that maybe opposes a deal, that thinks that it's wrong? And that moment, it kind of brought to me all the, like, how difficult this, all of this is, both in the sense that you're just going to lunch and you see this and that's crazy, and also in the sense that we, I think we have a basic understanding that we all care, we all want to see them home, but because it's so complicated, there's so much tension around it between the people that care. And that's very much on my mind.
I think in America, there's this phenomenon that I don't think is happening where you are, where people are ripping hostage posters down from street signs. And I understand that to be because they understand the posters as a justification for this war. They're trying to say this war should end, and therefore they're pulling the hostage posters down. And I'm curious if it sounds like to make a statement, Israel is standing idly by, they're also doing a lot. This war is a lot. And so is it a sense on the ground in Israel that working to release the captives and the war are different things, or that they are connected, when you feel like you're in a conversation about this trial and then you're in a conversation about redeeming captives? Do those feel like they are the same conversation, or in Israel, do they feel like they're happening in different arenas?
I think I've gone through the following process around it. I think at first I thought you had to choose one over the other. And then for a while I was convinced that there's a possibility that one is serving the other, that the war is serving freeing the hostages. Maybe that was true around the first wave of people being freed. But the truth is that where I am now, and I actually think that that our Talmud and the Halakha helped me here, because I came to the realization that when speaking about rules of war in Masechet Sota, and we're speaking about captives, which is in many places, but one example is Gittin, it's two separate issues. And the Rambam has them as two separate issues. I actually think you can take a strong stand on one, and it doesn't mean your stand on the other. I have come to a place where I feel it's legitimate and maybe even correct to deal with them separately. And the main question is, are we doing the most we can?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's a great question, and it really depends who you ask, right? Because our leaders in the army, they're saying, yeah, the main one of the two reasons for this war is to free the captives, and they have a theory behind it, right? Saying if we pressure Hamas more, so they're more likely. I think the dominant voice that we're hearing from the families and from the captives that have been freed are that is just like not true, and that there are other reasons for the war. Some think that these are maybe legitimate reasons, like providing safety in the future for Israelis. Some talk about less legitimate reasons, like all sorts of political factors. Mm-hmm. But there's at least a very big group of people that think that right now continuing this war is not... is maybe not the way to express our worry and care and hope that they will come back. Me on a personal level, the text I have in my mind is the Rambam about Pidyon Shvuim. The redemption of captives receives priority over sustaining the poor and providing them with clothing. Indeed, there's no greater mitzvah than the redemption of captives. For a captive is among those who are hungry, thirsty, and unclothed, and he is in mortal peril. If someone pays no attention to his redemption, he violates the negative commandments. Do not harden your heart or close your hand. Do not stand by when blood of your neighbor is in danger. He shall not oppress him with exhausting work in your presence. And he has negated the observance of the positive commandments. You shall certainly open up your hand to him, and your brother shall live with you. Love your neighbor as yourself. Save those who are taken for death. I think I mentioned that I'm experiencing how complicated this all is, and I feel also a lot of people have been having these halachic kind of questions, debates on the sugya. What do we have to do? And I feel we can't do that. I feel the Gemara is talking about a question whether a certain someone should invest a certain amount of money, and how far does this requirement have?
Yeah.
And here we're talking about war, and we're talking about governments, and we're talking about safety of millions of people on both sides. So I don't feel like we can have that conversation. But I think what we can have is this Rambam that defines, like, so clearly, this is the most important thing that you need to do. And if they are not on your mind, and if you're not doing everything you can, so you are kind of ignoring the core ideas of Judaism. And that is just something that we have to, like, hold and keep it up there in our minds. That's what I'm managing to do.
Yeah, it speaks obviously to this moment also in the Parsha cycle that I spent this last Shabbat thinking about, that commandment, not, you know, the sort of idea of not hardening your heart, that it feels, you know, when I listen to the week that you had, Avital, and the week that we're all living through, it feels nearly impossible. That seems like an impossible bar. How are we meant to keep our hearts open? Like, how can we do anything but harden our hearts? And then to hear the Rambam saying, actually, in a moment like this, maybe that's the most important thing to watch for, to guard against. And I'm curious how your heart is doing.
Yeah, the interesting thing for me this week, this idea of marking the 100th day, it helps, because the captives are on my mind a lot and I care for them, but we're humans, and when with time, 100 days, and we're living our lives and we're taking care of our children and we're going to work, and you can't keep it out there all the time, and just like marking it helps you. I think you know, it's just like in Kriyat Shema, the pshat of the commandment is that we need to think about the Torah every second of our life, and dream about it when we sleep and everything. And we can't do it, so we do it twice a day, and that helps us take the thing that is important to us and highlight it. So
yeah,
there are hundreds of people, families and friends of these people that they're doing the pshat of B'shoch V'cha V'kumecha. And for the rest of us, so we need to make sure to have these marks, so we to make sure we won't forget it.
Yeah, I really appreciate that image and connection. Actually makes me want to ask about tzitzit, because I feel like I just personally, you know, as the 100th day was approaching, I just finally ordered one of those hostage dog tag necklaces, which hasn't come yet. But I, in part because I felt like I can't hold this inside my heart anymore. It's, you know, it's too much to be all the time. And maybe if it's on the necklace, then that can do some of the holding for me in the way that you're describing. It's like, it's hard to keep something in you all the time. But also makes me think of the story that you shared of watching the man put up the poster and feeling like it's painful to know that he doesn't know that you're with him automatically, and wondering like, oh, if I wore this necklace, then would everybody know that this is, you know, that this is something I care about? You know, it's an interesting parallel to tzitzit of, oh, if I see your tzitzit, you don't have to tell me you care about mitzvot. I know you care. I can see your tzitzit. There's a part of me that is very much not the kind of person who wants to wear politics on my body. Like, I don't believe that you need to move through the world where everybody has to see your politics all the time and every moment. And so, again, it's sort of like trying to figure out, is this dog tag a political thing or is this a spiritual thing? Even here in America, but I'm curious how either of you feel about that.
But I think the first part of what you said is also very powerful, which is that sometimes it's too hard to hold in our heart, and so we hold it on our heart. In other words, there's definitely something about this topic, about the hostages, that is completely unbearable to hold. And so putting on the dog tag, the necklace, whatever we want to call it, is an easier almost way to hold the burden. And yesterday, I think, was an invitation to be more active about this issue.
By gathering in community?
By gathering in community, because as leaders, there was some expectation to actually say something about it. Gathering also means it was in the front and conscious rather than in the back and unconscious. Active in that sense. I moved in my mind yesterday for certain moments feeling the hostages need to be treated by all of us as our children and our parents. The Mishnah very strongly puts limitations on how much a society should put into freeing captives. It's interesting that it's in conversation with the Rambam. It's not necessarily the same exact tone. But of course, in its classic way, the Talmud brings up stories that go the other way, right? Because when law meets life, when halakha meets agada, things get much more complicated and murky. And so the Mishnah opens with putting the limitations, and then the Gemara tells us of a father who puts no limitations on what he's going to do to free his daughter. And then the Gemara discusses how that's possible and gets to the conclusion that maybe the lawmakers weren't pleased with this man. And that's the end of the conversation. In other words, they don't say he did something forbidden, he was stopped. They just said, maybe this is a moment where leadership, lawmakers, whatever we want to call them, and parents, family members, not only don't see eye to eye, but there are different expectations of how they're supposed to act.
Yeah.
And I felt yesterday that there were moments where we all are expected to be either a child of somebody kidnapped or a parent of somebody kidnapped and act in that way. And then on the other hand, there were moments where I just wanted to ease the existence of those family members. I think their sleep is not sleep and their food is not food, and it's a non-life that they're living to a certain degree. And I wanted to say, eat one meal and I will fast one meal. Sleep one night and I'll stay awake that one night, just a drop of the burden to take as an individual, as a society. Maybe because to think that there's a loved one living like the Rambam describes is unbearable. I want to add one more thing from the Gemara. There's a story about the daughters of Rav Nachman who were taken into captivity. There's a strange background to why this happens. But the Gemara summarizes and says, Garma lahu milta. This thing caused that they would be taken captive. And I felt like that's part of what's infuriating here, that there's a big thing that really doesn't have so much to do with the individuals who were doing what they were doing in a certain place at a certain moment. And then this milta, somebody wasn't pleased with this milta, with this thing, and they were taken captive. I said to Elazar when I walked in, it's an outrageous thought, so I'm hesitating about it. But there are moments where I feel like all of us on the ground here, Israelis and Palestinians, are pawns. And to a certain, of course, we're not taken captive like it is to be in a tunnel of the Hamas. When I take a cab with an Arab driver, I always ask what the thoughts are about the situation. And I think the feeling that there are leaders who have interests that are not, I always quote here the Americans, not so that we can have the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. That's a very hard feeling. And I think that that is something that maybe many of us who live in this region share.
Yeah. First of all, I just want to appreciate you, Avital, that that you're a person who asks that question to your cab driver, that you're a person who, as you described in the first story you shared, steps towards the woman who cried out instead of stepping away from the woman who cried out. That alone is an important model for us. But also to respond on the substance, I think something that I think about a lot also is, as you're describing this sort of people who are just in a place at a time, that there's a way in which, again, as we're struggling now with the loss of soldiers, that we can say, oh, like civilian deaths are the ones that are the tragedies. And yet, if it's your family member that was the soldier, you know, that loss is tremendous and tragic and enduring. You know, it's not like, well, because they were a soldier, it's okay. And I think there is some of that bigger picture of like, this is a thing that is happening to all of us. And then there is this other degree of, you know, people who were kidnapped as foreign workers or children that are just so absurdly beyond responsible for what is happening to them that it's almost unimaginable. For those who are joining us in this podcast for the first time, or for those of you who have been with us through this journey, we have been talking about what's happening and talking about some Torah for this moment, and trying also to include a word about prayer, how this is impacting your prayer life, and or are there tefillot that you're drawing on now in this moment? So perhaps we'll end with an image or two about tefillah.
I can share a very, very personal image. So in the first round, when they were freeing a few of the captives, there was a beautiful picture of a 3-year-old girl that her mother was freed. There's a picture of them in the hospital that you can't see the mother's face. You can just see after her daughter ran to her and she was like on her shoulder, and she has, it's not exactly a smile, it's more like this sort of like radiating like beam. And last year, my wife Alisa, she was away for 2 months working on her PhD in Oxford, and when she came back, my 3-year-old son came and hugged her, and I got a picture from the same angle, and the pictures, it's exactly the same. It's like literally I've printed them out and I put them next to each other, and they're exactly the same. And when I pray about the captives, I'm just trying to imagine like more and more children with that sort of like amazing, amazing beam of like the biggest joy and relief that you can think of. And I'm just trying to hold on to that image and to make that a reality, and imagine us singing to them in shul when they come back or something like that. That's just like my way of doing it.
Yesterday, I guess, opened the rally that we did in the morning with many of the neighborhood learning institutions and synagogues, with words that were used to hearing on Yamim Noraim. Rachamana de'ane, de'ane le'aniye, hu ya'anena. The merciful one who answers the ones in need, who he will answer us. I guess that's the prayer.
Thank you. May all of these hostages be released between now and when we record next week.
Amen.
Amen.
On Sacred Ground is produced by Hadar. Thank you to our team, Sam Greenberg, Effie Unterman, and Jeremy Tabak for producing this podcast, and to David Chabinsky for recording and editing this episode.